along as well. A lot of stuff in the news. What an amazing news cycle the past several days with all of the stuff around the Epstein files and with all of the stuff around the saber rattling off the coast of Venezuela. Interested in knowing what you think about what's going on. My program today also involves a couple of colleagues, friends of mine who are members of the African diaspora, talking about communities that we are part of. We are in community. Interested in your point of view as well. So, you know, if you have some comments or some ideas to share, you want to join the conversation. If you're listening on any of the social media platforms, we're streaming live on LinkedIn, we're streaming live on, I think, Facebook and YouTube. And if you're connecting through any of those channels, we'd love to have your involvement as well. As always, we thank you for being a supporter of KFAI, this powerful resource and community, and we want you to keep doing that. If you want to connect, though, drop us a line at al@insightnews or at mcfarlandmedia@gmail, or if you're on one of the social media platforms, there's a chat that you can connect to. We'd love to talk to you as well. I was so impressed with how our community has been responding to the challenges in Jamaica. We had a great program about 2 weeks ago that connected people on the ground in Jamaica. Actually, my first cousin, Phil McFarland, took us up into St. Mary, which is where my family is from, and gave us a survey of some of the damage that that community experienced. And that wasn't the worst hit. The worst hit was on the Black River on the south coast of Jamaica, where the Hurricane Melissa made landfall. Massive destruction, unbelievable destruction, winds in excess of 185 miles per hour, sustained winds. So we keep watching and listening, but we keep feeling encouraged and just the beauty of humanity when we see people from around the world responding and supporting the relief efforts, being compassionate, sending money and goods to help people in Jamaica and in Cuba who were impacted by Hurricane Melissa. And if you want to help, you can do a couple of things. One is look up the information for the Jamaica, Minnesota organization or the Caribbean Disaster Relief Association and find out what you can do either in sending new goods or materials that they can use for building and restoration or in sending money to the charities that are doing the work there. I'm going to give you some information about that. I'm looking at the Insight News of November 10th, and that's where we covered the event. And we talked about that unfolding of the hurricane and the community's response in that edition of Insight News. I'm going to share some follow-up stories, though, that we published in Insight News. One is by April Ryan, who writes for the Washington Bureau of the Black Press of America National Newspaper Publishers Association. She said that United Nations reported that Hurricane Melissa scattered nearly 5 million tons of debris across western Jamaica, hindering crews from delivering and restoring critical services promptly. According to the reports she wrote, crews were working to clear roads, attempting to reach some 27 communities cut off by landslides and flooding. Many of those communities were still without power and without Wi-Fi. This Category 5 storm at that point had killed at least 32 people in Jamaica and another 43 in nearby Haiti. And in Haiti, some 13 still remained missing at that time. She wrote that here in the U.S., the head of the Congressional Black Caucus, Congresswoman Yvette Clark from New York, was working feverishly with the State Department to ensure that help was going to be getting delivered to Jamaica and Caribbean nations. Both of the New York Congresswoman's parents immigrated to the U.S. from Jamaica. She's been a strong advocate for Caribbean issues, and she serves as co-chair of the Congressional Caribbean Caucus. According to a State Department website, within hours, Secretary Mark Rubio deployed a regional disaster assistance response team, including urban search and rescue teams, to assess needs and provide search and recovery assistance. I want to read some more of that article that appeared in the last week, November 10th issue of Insight News, still on newsstands. And this piece was written by April Ryan, who is the Black Press USA Washington Bureau Chief and White House correspondent. If you haven't seen Insight, go out and pick it up. A lot of good stories about the hurricane relief and response and more. Let's see. She wrote, this is reading an article by April Ryan for Black Press USA. She talked about another Jamaican native and activist, Cheryl Lee Ralph, who is popular as a television star, movie star, who said it's, you know, at exactly a week later, she was concerned that there were people still who have not had anybody come to help them. Nobody, she said. She said, it's rough. We need help there. We need it now. And she was calling all the people who've enjoyed the beaches of Jamaica to help by finding trusted places that you know and making a donation. And that, as the storm's destruction, has really halted the normalcy of life in the island. She provided an update on some of the areas that hold personal significance for her, all of us do. She said the school that my parents helped build lost their roof. Now they're trying to figure out what they're gonna do with the kids, how they're gonna get them back in school, things like that. And she said, it's like, I see where we're going afterwards, but how do we start to get help there now? And she said she's had her friends and family donate to their facility called Walk Good LA to help address some of the dire needs in Jamaica. And her family used the same space to donate goods and help victims of the LA fires earlier this year. So it's connecting a set of tragedies there, reminding us that we're the same here as well. And, you know, we had a great story based on the conversation we did here on the program. I'm going to share that with you now, because 2 weeks ago, as the hurricane was unfolding, we brought in local and international people to deal with the discussion, what was going on. One article written by our reporter, Pauline Chouani, talked about the show we did here on the station. I'll read it. She said, from the opening chords followed, when the opening chords faded on Radio KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, host Al McFarland leaned into the microphone and said, I'm Al McFarland. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. Today, we're talking all things Jamaica. She said his tone carried both heaviness and urgency. A historic storm had just battered the island of Jamaica, and Twin Cities' Jamaican diaspora community was mobilizing to respond. According to multiple international reports, Hurricane Melissa made landfall in Jamaica on 28 October 2025 as a powerful Category 3 storm with sustained winds of about 185 miles per hour. And according to reports by several media outlets, the storm has been described as the strongest ever strike Jamaica since systematic record keeping began in 1851. Outlets also reveal that the devastation was widespread, with hospitals damaged, entire communities cut off, major agricultural zones flattened, and power knocked out to hundreds of thousands. Reuters reported that the island's southern and western parishes St. Elizabeth, Westmoreland, St. James, Hanover, Trelawney were among the hardest hit. The scale of damage still emerging. And one fact was clear, that this is not going to be business as usual for Jamaica. Reading the article, it says McFarland introduced his cousin, Philip McFarland, a recording producer who owns Iry Jute Tapes and Records and leads the roots band Earthcry. Phil McFarland joined from Kingston via video live stream. He said, "Me personally, I'm good. But collectively as a country, we're going through it. Those of us who are in a better position to help, that's what we're doing." He described the storm's trajectory. Philip said it came from the east, passed south, and then went west and northwest. That took the eye through St. Elizabeth, Westmoreland, St. James, Hanover, Trelawney, Manchester, and Clarendon. Even in St. Mary, where I'm from, where he's from, every farm tree down, houses without roofs. My mother's roof is gone completely. Phil went on to say that some towns are marooned off, no electricity, no phones, nothing. He said he read a story yesterday where somebody said they had counted 19 bodies on the ground and they can't get to them. His voice held the weight of that reality. When asked where people are sleeping at night, he responded, "Outside. Thousands. It's impossible for government or any institution to rebuild that quick, Some say busing them to Kingston. Change inside here. Busing them to Kingston and getting them into tents and with warm food and beds, but you're talking about thousands of families in rural hills with no power, no roads. They're sleeping outside, trying to catch, you know, a break. Joining from Minneapolis, Marina Neal, better known as Trini C, she's a board member of the Caribbean Disaster Relief Fund of Minnesota, spoke with both heartbreak and determination. She said, "It's heart-wrenching. I've traveled to Jamaica for 20 years into communities like Flankers and Tivoli, not resorts. And what I'm seeing now looks like a bomb went off. No green, just brown and broken. And yet, even in that, the people, while screaming for help, are not broken." Her organization sprang into action within days. She explained, "We sent the email, we got together, we asked people to donate funds, to funnel money through official Jamaican government sites and through trusted local organizations. We put barrels at Galaxy Foods at local Caribbean community locations. We condensed the island's long list of needs down to essentials, things like soap, toothpaste, batteries, tarps, blankets, new items only, please, not used clothing." So the message is being sent that's being sent to Jamaica is one of dignity. Trini C. Has coordinated volunteers, social media campaigns, and local drop-off spots. Galaxy Foods donated large space barrels and manpower, and they did the inventory, built the barrels, and shipped them to Jamaica. Philip, in Jamaica on the program, continued, and he shared what struck him most in his visit to affected areas. He said, "You can spend 40 years chasing one thing, a house, a car, and lose it in a day. These people, however, are finding happiness in living simple. They're smiling because their value isn't in material things. You'll see someone say, 'My house is gone, but give me some bread, give me a board, give me a nail, and we'll string it back up. Cook the food, laugh, play music. You can't defeat them mentally.'" I close the segment. It said Alan McFarland closed the segment with the phrase his cousin had shared, "We're not dead, but we're going to suffer." He paused. That honestly matters. So from Minnesota to Jamaica, communities are forging a bridge of care, of faith, of action that meet under one roof, one barrel, one family at a time. The storm has left devastation in its wake, but the response is already moving forward. That article written by Pauline Pulani Choani, a contributing writer. interested in your comments, and you can connect, join this conversation by checking us out on any of the platforms that we're streaming on, YouTube or Facebook or LinkedIn. And, you know, you can send me a note if you want to, an email note to McFarlandMedia@gmail.com. We'd love to have your feedback and your comment. I'm going to share a couple of more stories about Jamaica as well. But I'm hoping that I'll be joined momentarily by a couple of my friends from the diaspora talking about our experiences, their experiences in the diaspora, and how we continue to develop and create community, and what it means to be in community here in Minnesota. Let's see, I'm Alan McFarland. This is The Conversation with Alan McFarland. This is a special time just to connect with you listeners here on KFAI. And let me give you an email address. If you've got a question or comment that you want to bring to the conversation, love to have you just send an email to me. You can send it to me at McFarlandMedia@gmail.com. I'm monitoring my email as we speak, and we'd love to hear from you. So drop me a note at McFarlandMedia@gmail.com. McFarlandMedia@gmail.com. So, let's see, and I've got another couple of people that I might be able to send a link to in just a second to join the program as well. So what's on your mind? I'm interested in knowing what our listeners and viewers are thinking about the news. And I'm particularly interested in how we are processing all of the chicanery around the emails for Jeffrey Epstein. I've been watching the news riveted to the satirists in particular, who are raising all kinds of questions about what's being revealed in the emails that were released by the Epstein estate, Jeffrey Epstein's estate. And it's curious that now that Congress has decided to authorize the release, the president is saying that he's supporting doing that as well. So let's see. If you got some comments, I'd love to hear your comments. Again, drop me an email at McFarlandMedia@gmail. Love to get you on the program. I'll send you a link and you can join the program as well. Let's see. Any thoughts on the news? And Station, can you, if a person wants to call and maybe join the show on the station or by phone, maybe you can share a phone number that I can have them call in and get feedback or comments on it. Because again, we're all sort of looking at what this means for our country and what kind of leadership we have in the country. I'm Alan McFarland. Again, this is The Conversation with Alan McFarland, and we're glad to be here and glad to have you along as well. I've got time to connect with you. And if you want to give us a call here at the station or drop me a note at McFarlandMedia@gmail.com, I'd be glad to bring your comments forward. Let me share another article with you until we get another voice in from last week's Insight News as well. And this is another piece written by our writer, Pulani Choani. And let's see, I think somebody's joining me now. Hold on a second. Not quite. And see, this is a piece by Pulani Choani as well. She talked about the two other guests that were on the program with us here a couple of weeks ago. I'll read the article. It says, on a recent broadcast of Radio KFAI 90.3 FM, The Conversation with Alan McFarland, the Tennessee, the Twin Cities Airwaves became a lifeline linking Minnesota's Jamaican diaspora with the islands in crisis. And that's reference to the landfall of Hurricane Melissa on October 28th. According to Associated Press, Melissa struck as a Category 5 hurricane with sustained winds of 185 miles per hour, making it the strongest storm ever recorded to hit Jamaica. Veteran community organizer Earl Paris, a leader with the Jamaica Minnesota organization, spoke with calm determination during the live broadcast. He said, "When I'm lying in bed and I say my prayers, I say we're going to get through this. Jamaica has set such a standard in the world, and that now I see the whole world coming to help us." Paris recalled that JMO, Jamaica Minnesota organization, was born out of earlier disaster efforts. 37 years ago, it was Hurricane Gilbert, he said. 37 years before that, it was Hurricane Charley. Out of Gilbert, this organization was started, and we're still here. He positioned the current response as part of that legacy. Now, JMO is once again rallying to coordinate the relief with the Caribbean Disaster Relief Fund of Minnesota and other community partners. And he said that this was like on the 10th, that tomorrow night we're sorting and shipping barrels. And we've reached out to friends and JMO members and the general population. People are calling in, sending emails and saying, "Yep, I'm coming. I'll bring a friend." The invitation was intentional. The crisis demanded vehicles of support and not just passersby. And so he made a pointed observation. He said, "Some people say they don't have money, but they have hands, and their humanity." Let's see. Hold on. There we go. change the page here. Their humanity is the most valuable thing in the world. He said, "Give me an hour, give me a half hour. That's what matters." And he reinforced the idea of people just showing up with labor and packing and helping with the shipping. Also joining the conversation was Waylon Richards, who heads the Organization for Strategic Development in Jamaica. It's called OSDJ. "And strategic is the key word in our name," he said. "We respond now, but we're also thinking 10 years ahead. We're thinking, what will the needs be when the headlines fade?" So he described an organization with a long-term vision, meaning that youth and community development, healthcare infrastructure, social resilience were key factors. Now, with Melissa having destroyed or damaged hospitals, roads, and utility structures, that strategic horizon matters. He cited, for example, the damage reported at the Black River Hospital and the hundreds of thousands left without electricity. He announced that the OSDJ's upcoming gala, which was held last week on November 15th, under the theme "Strengthening the Bond Between Minnesota and Jamaica," was launching a campaign titled "A Million Friends for Jamaica." And the concept was that they were trying to invite a million people, a million friends of Jamaica, to, over the next 5 years, donate a minimum of $10 annually to a fund rebuilding efforts in Jamaica. And two immediate flagship projects, he said, included the Davison Outreach Center and a new ward for the Bustamante Hospital for Children in Jamaica. So, good reports. Go to Inside News and read more about that. Again, we appreciate what we were able to do here at Inside News, and we invite you to be supportive of that as well. So one of my colleagues has joined me. I was waiting for him, and I see he's in the studio now. Let me bring him on board. I'm going to add him to the stage here. Wilfred Harris is here. Wilfred, brother Wilfred, how you doing, man?
Oh, Al, I'm doing so well.
Okay, well, good to see you. Always great to hear your voice.
Always great hearing yours too, you know.
You've got the perfect radio voice, and we think that's just amazing. You know, I think that for the first part of the show, my producer jumped on. We were not live streaming to our social media platforms. So we've done around 20 minutes of the show just on the radio, which is great because the radio is powerful. But now we've added to the radio our Facebook channel, our LinkedIn channel, and our YouTube channels, and our Twitter channel. So if you are connecting with us on any of those channels, we thank you and we invite you to join this conversation. And I started off, Wilford, by saying that you and another colleague would be joining the show to talk about the African community, the African diaspora, and how we have to build community wherever we are. You're doing wonderful things with the West African and Liberian community, and you've created a new organization called Safeguard Minnesota. Let me take a minute to have you introduce Safeguard Minnesota, the vision and the mission. So go ahead, Wilford.
Thank you so much. May God richly bless you, my brother. Yes, I just reinvented myself. You know, I've been around for almost, three decades, like the former mayor of Brooklyn Center said at my lunch. And what happened, we have to come together and we have to do things in a way that rising tides will raise all boats. We cannot fly solo anymore. So we started Safeguard Minnesota. Basically, we deal with safety and equity issues. No matter where you are, those are the two major things that tend to shape the destiny of what we want to do. Safety and equity. So that's what we are about, doing everything humanly possible to make sure that our people are safe and they enjoy equitable situations. So that's what we are about. So.
I'm always curious, and I love to have stories about how people came to Minnesota. And how did you come to Minnesota, Wilford? Give me your
story. Well, remember now, we were literally the first group to come to Minnesota. Literally, I mean, when you talk about Africans. Mm-hmm. Yes, what happened, Don Woody had a contract with the major iron ore company in Liberia, LAMCO, and were training their technical team here. So we started coming to Minnesota. That's one way. The second way, Liberia is, you know, a Christian country. In fact, the first capital city was called Christopolis, but it changed it to Monrovia after fifth president James Monroe, because he was able to get some money to give to the ACS to send, you know, free black men back to Africa. So what happened? We used to listen to Billy Graham's. You remember Billy Graham's? You used to always end by saying, this is Billy Graham from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Before you go on, when I first went to Jamaica up in the country where my family is from, I told
you. Trust me, I know that. You always used to leave me and go.
They said, oh, Minneapolis, Minnesota's, right? That's how they refer to it. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes. So basically, he used to come and say, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So then I asked my dad, I said, Dad, we live in a place called Minneapolis, Minnesota. But then all of a sudden, it so happened that we decided, you know, when the Civil War came, that's when you had a mass exit of people from Liberia. Because Liberia was like, you know, the land of liberty. Yeah, people came from all over Africa. That was the first independent republic, you know. So we gave the light to Africa. And so they came over and everybody came. No, from Jamaica, from just name it, they came. Yes, we were like the melting pot. When I met Jimmy Cliff here in Minnesota, he told me, he said, oh, you're from Liberia. That's the land of the black. Jimmy left. So that's why we are here. But I told my friend, Senator Paul Weston, he asked me the same story. And I said, Senator, you don't realize something. I said, when you white people want to go for vacation, you go to warm places. So we black people want to come on vacation. Or go to unification, we go to cold places. So that's why we are here in Minnesota. And Paul Wellstone never forgive me for that question, that answer I gave him. Yeah. So that's what happened. So we are here doing everything humanly possible to work together. And we have worked together. I cannot forget Lucille Kitchen. I'll forget about the food this time. Let's talk about big idea of coming together and just, well, by like my English teacher used to say, just elucidating, propounding. Yes. Yeah. Thank you for keeping the touch burning, because, I mean, well, when I listen to you, it's like the voice never tarnish. The voice is there. And you remember you left me and you went to Jamaica when they had this riot in Minneapolis. And the first song I played was Get Up, Stand Up, Get Up for Your Right. Don't give up the fight. And he said, and the next one, I shot the sheriff. I didn't shoot the deputy. He told me, one guy said, that African you got out there, man, he had this place going. Yes. Yes. So how is our brother, man? Your brother, how is he doing?
He's doing well. Wayne is still playing music and performing all around the area, doing a great job and loving it.
Please say hello, man. Your wife. And you have what? Two daughters, right?
Three.
Or one.
Four. Oh, four daughters. Yeah. Four daughters. Yeah.
Also, when I left you, I had two more. I'm sorry. I'm just kidding.
When I met you. You just didn't know them all.
But yeah, I didn't know them all. You're right.
But we're all doing well, you know. So, you know, give me an idea. Give me a description of the Liberian community in Minnesota. How large is that community? And the question that I'm leading to is what the status is. Our immigration policy is on the chopping block right now. Under the current administration.
All over. President every demographic.
Seems to be saying that he only wants certain people in this country. Mm-hmm. That he wants to bring people from either Europe or white South Africans. And he seems to be telling the world that anybody that's not white is not welcome in this country. That's how I'm reading it. How does it sound to you? And well, I'm just throwing these out for a general discussion, Wilfred Harris, because talk about, you mentioned how the first Liberians came here and how those numbers grew. And how they were allowed to stay with TPS, temporary, was TPS
protection status,
status. But that has always been up and down, up and on. And I'm not sure what the status is right now. So walk us through those things.
Well, Al, the thing is, when we came here, I mean, you hardly had Africans around you. But, well, you know, whenever there was some disturbance in the certain part of Africa, the people lobby. And then they got what you call the TPS and all that, you know, getting people from harm's way. And most of the time, it was like a coup d'etat. I mean, Liberia was, if not the most stable, one of the most stable countries in the world. Until 1980, we got it one morning, and all of a sudden, you know, and that was it. And people started looking for safe haven. And Liberia, with the relationship they have with the United States, which a lot of people don't recognize anymore. Yeah, you even heard the President Eisenhower, President Joseph Boakai, you speak very good English. Where do you learn English? Mm-hmm. Joseph Boakai said, sir, I mean, so composed. I mean, a true diplomat, yes. And he said, Mr. President, I am from Liberia. I learned to speak English in Liberia, and I'm the president of that country today. And that was the only answer. Somebody called me. You know, he used to be my boss. Somebody said, you want to tell me, Minister Boakai, I couldn't say something more than that. But I told him, I said, if you know the man, Joseph Boakai, he's by birth a diplomat. And you know, sometimes you don't fight fire with fire. You know, when you fight fire with fire, why do you get ashes? That's not much you can do with ashes. Mm. Or to throw it around a plan for it to grow better. So Joseph Boakai handled it in the most diplomatic manner, and I think that anybody could have handled it. Yeah, so that's where we are. But the immigrants, I mean, that's what my company does. We look for help for immigrants. Mm-hmm. I mean, if a non-immigrant needs help, we give it to them. But our primary stakeholders target that's immigrants. And we've been doing a good job. We go through the churches. Because like I said the other day with the leaders of those churches, I said, look, it's not by mistake that Martin Luther King went to his father's church. You know, we should stand on the shoulders of not only the churches, but the faith-based organizations. Because at least they meet the people once a week. And during election time, for some reason, our people are so busy that they don't even want to vote. Like I said to them the other day, when I met my friend John Lewis in Atlanta, when I was in Atlanta, he put my hand on his head and he said, "What do you feel?" I said, "Your skull." He said, "That's not my skull." You know, he said, that's artificial skull. He said, "They broke my head on, I think what he said, Black Sunday or something." Yes. So the people fought. Now you can go and vote when you become citizens and they stay at home. So I said, "Well, you stay at home. Whatever they gave you, you have to accept it." But then I tell the pastors, I said, "Look, you don't have to tell the people for whom to vote, but tell them to vote." And that's my mission. Yeah. So thank you so much. We really appreciate you.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the strife at home, what happened over the several administrations, the civil wars in Liberia that led to a lot of the displacement of people.
Well, the thing is, the revolution will always eat its children, if you want to call a coup d'etat a revolution. The revolution will always eat its children. You know, it's just like the guy who and Fidel Castro took over. When they took over, he told him, he said, "I can't stay with you, my brother. I got to go." He said, "Because it will not be long. When you start being hard on the people, they will turn to me and say, 'You got to do something with him.'" He said it would not happen. That he left and he went to, I think, Bolivia. Yeah. So the same thing happened in Liberia. Mm-hmm. They got together and they decided that what they call the American Liberians, mm-hmm. you know, were monopolizing the wealth of the country.
So give me a time frame.
1980.
Prior to 1980, there'd been a fairly stable long-term government structure, right? And cultural structure.
From 1847, Liberia got independence 1847 when the whole of Africa was asleep. Mm-hmm. That's why they say when freedom raised a glowing form of Montserrat of Varian Height, the Lone Star forever. Yes, since then, the Lone Star, which is the name of our flag. Mm-hmm. And he said, we talk about a race benighted. When he said benighted in English, which means you're nothing. And the black race was benighted. Or people were brought here in chains. Mm-hmm. Like Royce, he said, "I wasn't there when they brought the slave. I wasn't there when they beat my great-great-grandfather. When he cried out for help, I wasn't there when they raped my great-great-grandmother. But I can feel the pain." Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what happened. And people don't seem to realize that. Mm-hmm. When they talk about different people who went through repression, depression all over Europe and all that, they forget about what Africans went through. And those things, they don't only stay for a few decades, they stay for centuries.
Generations.
Generations, they're centuries, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's hard.
So from 1840s up to the 1950s, fairly consistent
basically what happened, the American Liberians ruled. But their number.
Let's break that. What is an American Liberian?
American Liberians.
What's the story? What is that?
People who came from the West. Because the first group of people like where I grew up, they came from Mississippi. There's a book called Mississippi in Africa, because there was a slave master who was very rich, but he started having a lot of children by his slaves. Then your child is your child, your children are your children. And he reached a stage where he said, "Well, I can't keep them here. I will send them back to where their ancestors came from." And that way, Greenville, the capital city called Greenville, because they came from Greenville, Mississippi. You go to Liberia right now, you got how they call it? You got a different, I mean, you got Carriage Bike, You got a whole state called Maryland. And the president who stayed there for 27 years, William B. S. Stutman, he came from Atlanta. He came from Georgia. That's why the Tutmans. Well, a lot of the people from Maryland, they name their children after the different cities in Georgia, Fulton. Mm-hmm. And the county is Fulton County. Mm-hmm. Beaufort. Yeah, so you have Beaufort Yancey, Fulton Yancey. Mm-hmm. That much America was tied in with Liberia. In fact, there's a joke out that Thomas Jefferson, who was the first secretary, the second vice president, third president, you know, he had his wife, his maid, Sally Hemings. Mm-hmm. She had five children. Mm-hmm. Three of those children were by him. Yes, in fact, when he made ambassador to France, he took her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, France did not tolerate slavery. Mm-hmm. So he had to pay her as a domestic worker. Well, he the one that made crafted the Declaration of Independence and all that. He said, all men are created equal. And that was citing inalienable right among them, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Mm-hmm. But those words did not come from Thomas Jefferson. How can a slave master who had 400 slaves, because he had 400, and George Washington had 450 mm-hmm. slaves that had promoted themselves in politics, in business, and all that. The slave wiped the field. And they said the blacks were lazy. Mm-hmm. Why can you say the man is lazy? when he tore the ground, he cleared the field, he planted the seeds, he harvested his crops, he cooked the food, he put on the table, and sometimes you are brave enough to say, come feed me. Yet instead you say you're lazy.
Mm. Mm.
So that's some of the things that we went through as black people. But black people not, man. No.
So the Americo-Liberians are the ones who had been enslaved, but they were returned. Was it the American Colonial Society? What was it called?
The American Colonization Society, because the first intent... Mm-hmm. There was a guy called Henry Clay. Henry Clay was from Kentucky. He was the one, if not the greatest, one of the greatest speakers of the House America ever had. And he won, he advised James Monroe. He said, if it's stated in the Bible that the slave will one day rule the master, let us see how we can get these people out of here. So they went and they started the American Colonization Society. The first intent was to colonize Liberia. But there was a man that stood up, Frederick Douglass. He told him, he said, oh, my dead body. Will Liberia be colonized? He said, because colonization and slavery, that's a set of twins from the same mother. That's why Liberia was not colonized. Yeah, so the same Henry Clay had a brother called Cassius Clay. They were Muhammad Ali got that name from Cassius Clay because two brothers were two different people.
Mm-hmm.
Henry Clay used to put down the black man whenever he wanted to because, you know, that was the order of the day those days. But Cassius Clay, his brother, he will punch your nose back into your head if you were ever to touch it or insult a black man. He said, how much can these people take? How much more can these people take? And because he was so loved by the black people, this woman had her child. Why did she name the child Cassius Clay? And he go up. You see, God, the God we serve is a strategic planner, though. He planted that ball into that woman's womb, and he came up. He became the greatest fighter the world has ever seen. So you see,
we got a comment from Anthony Scott, who's here in Twin Cities. Hey, Anthony. Put his comment up, says his dad, Walter Scott Sr., I knew his dad, was the author of the Scott Collection, who's born in Greenville, Mississippi. He said, thanks, this is a great history, great program. And I sent Anthony
Scott from Greenville.
Yeah, from Greenville.
Scott, what is the name of your dad?
Well, Walter Scott. His dad was Walter Scott Sr. He's from Greenville, Mississippi. Yeah.
That's strange because I should know everybody from Greenville, literally. Walter Scott.
I have relatives from my in-laws, married people were from Greenville. You might have known Leon Rankin. Did you know him?
Leon Rankin
used to be the vice president of the Minneapolis Urban League. He was an electrician. And a civil rights. He was a civic activist alongside Gleason Glover and Ron Edwards, all of the pioneer freedom fighters in Minnesota.
Yeah.
But Leon Rankin was from Greenville as well.
Yeah, but by that time I was either in my mom or my dad was trying to that's before my time.
Pivot a second.
But Scott family is from China. Yeah, the Scott,
I want to pivot a second to bring another guest in. I've been waiting on her. Come back. Crystal Porter is joining me real quickly. Crystal, good to see you, my friend. How you doing? Thank you for jumping on the program for a couple of minutes. How are you? You have to unmute. You're on mute, I think. I see you, but I don't hear you. Try it. Okay. It looks like you're not muted, but say something. No sound. That's the only, I'm not getting any sound. Okay. Go out and come back, and then we'll see what happens. So Wilfred, we're talking about the Americo-Liberians, and I wanted to get a sense of when and how and why did the Civil War occur? Why was this great upheaval? Here's what I think. And maybe I'm wrong, but you tell me.
No. Go ahead.
My limited knowledge says that at some point in time, the Liberian community wanted to question the financial relationship between U.S. Industrialists, particularly the Firestones and the rubber industry, who were basically getting all of the natural resources from Liberia, but robbing the people of Liberia. The people stayed poor, and they extracted the wealth. And at some point in time, the government, I'm not sure if it was the Tubmans or ones after them, said, we need to renegotiate. Y'all got to pay for this natural resource. And when they did, then the West said, we'll get rid of you and put somebody else in. Is that the wrong understanding? Tell me.
Well, the thing is, it was part of the package, a major part of the package, because Harvey Firestone, Harvey Firestone, or looking for a place to plant rubber. He tried Brazil, he tried this place, Malaysia, and all that. Until he got to Liberia. When he got to Liberia, literally, it's like when you put your thumb in the ground, it will grow. That had a rubber, that one Liberian soil was so appropriate for the growth of a rubber. So he came from Indiana, Gary, I think came from Indiana. And they went out there and they got, I think it was 2 million acres. Yes, and they just started planting the rubber. And they say it was the rubber from Liberia that saved the World War II for America.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because. And they signed a 99-year contract. Mm-hmm. And it so happened that when the 99 years were over, just what happened in Panama. You know, and the people say, well, it's about time you take your exit. Mm-hmm. And right away, there was confusion, there was trouble. And it so happened that during the same time, America turned 200. And guess who was the guest speaker? This highly educated American Liberian is from Charleston, South Carolina, called William R. Talbot, the Talbot family. And he delivered a speech. He was the keynote speaker at that event. And that's his speech was, let Congress decide. And from that time, he was honored. And not only that, his son was read by his friend, who is but Kwame Nkrumah. Abe Edopo Benedict Tobo, highly intelligent guy. And he went on 60 Minutes and said, it's about time that Africa should unite. And I'm putting my name forward to lead Africa. And the white man should be beware. And whenever you stand up like that, I tell you, you see boots on the ground.
It's dangerous. It's dangerous. We'll come back to this again. I see Crystal's here. But as you say that, I'm thinking about this one figure that's currently on the ground in Burkina Faso.
And that's, Traoré. Ibrahim Traoré.
That's another conversation. We'll come back to that. Crystal, give your sound. Hey, Crystal. Let's see if I can hear you now. Still don't have any sound. No. Well, let me say what I was going to have you, and you can correct me. West Broadway Business Association is promoting Black Friday on West Broadway. And Crystal is the executive director, the leader of the West Broadway Business Association. And Crystal, we can do this later again. I'm sorry that we see you, and thank you for being here. But I wanted to use today's show to help you and ask you to promote West Broadway businesses and get people in Twin Cities to come by and support a wonderful group of businesses, entrepreneurs, people that I think in the spirit of this conversation between Wilfred Harris and I, people who are operating from the principle of building self-reliance, of building enterprise, building community by serving each other with integrity and with quality. So the West Broadway Business Association is presenting its, maybe you can put a flyer up. Can you share a flyer so I can give the details of it? I think you can share it. I see you talking, but we can't hear you on the radio, and we can't hear you, no audio. Yeah. Our friend Michelle says greetings and gives us a thumb up and thank you. Anthony Scott, in the meantime, has said that Mr. Rankin and his grandfather, Wayne Blanton, worked together. You could put something in the chat if you wanted to, and I can just share that in the out of the private chat or either in the chat, either place would work. Yeah. Everything works out. It's all in divine order. It still works quite well. Wilfred, we got about five minutes left. Let's go back to you and I talking. And when I get the information to share from West Broadway Business Association,
I'll show up.
But I guess we've served good notice that this important thing is happening on West Broadway, and all of our listeners here at KFAI, social media, support Black business on West Broadway during Black Friday. And that starts a lot of major activities. It's going to be November 28th and 29th, Friday from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., a number of wonderful activities, a fashion show on Friday and Saturday at the Capri Theater, I think. And just a lot of good stuff. So check us out. We'll post this on our webpage at insidenews.com and our social media. And they're also doing family Christmas pictures on both days. So you want your family Christmas photograph? Here's where to get it done at the West Broadway Black Friday, November 28th and 29th, Friday, 3 to 7, Saturday, 11 to 5. Crystal, thank you. We'll come back, okay? We got time to do this again, and thank you so much. Okay, take care. Getting a thumbs up. And I see another friend has jumped on here. Let me see who I've got here for the last few minutes. No, I think we just got that. That was it. Wilfred, you and I can keep going.
Before you go, I wish I could get her information to help to spread it to my stakeholders. Her information to make sure that we attend and let them know what's going on, because we have to coexist.
Yeah. You can put that in the chat too, Crystal. Yeah. I'll share that with Wilfred. So Wilfred's connected to the entire Liberian and West African community in Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park. And we want to make sure that all of us have a chance to get together. Okay. So, she says her kids are the Dunbars. You know the Dunbars?
Oh, God, the Dunbars. My brother jumped in our family, and his oldest son, who's a complete computer whiz, is from Dunbar, Leroy Dunbar.
So she's nodding. So yeah. So small world.
Yeah, let's hook up. At the Dumbass, yeah, my nephew put us in our family. My dad died. In fact, his best friend, Dumba, eulogized it. Yeah. So the Dumbas are part of us, man.
We had hoped to have on our program, and he was here before we started. His technology must have failed him. But another friend of yours said he hadn't seen you in years.
And who does?
That's brother Tunde Oka Okoya-Bawal.
You told me, you call his name, and I say, hey, look, tell me where that guy is so I can get the police to arrest him and bring him to me.
I miss my brother, man. He was supposed to be on the show with us today.
And he didn't. Okay, I will get his information from you.
I will get, yeah. He was announcing the opening of the Minnesota
Yoruba
for Arts and Culture. And he's having an open house ceremony on November 20th from 12 noon to 6 p.m. The address for the center is 7420 Unity Avenue North.
I will make my way there.
In Brooklyn Park. So, Okoya-Bawal.
Yeah, well, listen, I will get his information from you.
We still got 3 or 4 minutes before we close out, and I want to talk to you more about where our country is and what about the immigration policies right now. What is TPS status right now for Liberians, and what do you think we're facing as a community? Here's what I think. I'll do this briefly. I think that our current leader, President, and I think that that's the presidency right now is a rogue enterprise. It's dangerous, right? It's a criminal enterprise at this moment. And part of its criminality is the effort to return to a condition of marginalization, suppression of Black and brown people. And they talked about the Haitians, they're rounding up Latino people just on how they look. They're rounding up Africans. At some point in time, as an American-born African, I have to believe that if push came to shove, they would try to round me up too. And my family's been here longer than theirs have. So what do you think? Where are we now, and what's going to happen from the Liberian point of view?
Well, let's face it, the people are scared. If you ask, I tell you the truth, because part of my thing has to do with safety. And I get calls, I go to the different churches, and you hear the pastors praying for the people that God would have mercy on them and touch the heart of the leadership of this country. This is the greatest country God ever created, and guess what happened? There might not be another one after. But I tell you this today. When the people decide, no matter what happened, my brother, Rome was there for so long, I only wish and pray that people will make sure that they do what people say, my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray and change from their wicked ways and seek my face. Then will I hear from heaven, forgive their sin and heal the land. Let us change from this idea of going after people, and doing what we are doing. This is a beautiful country. Let us not spoil it. Yeah. If this country goes down, the world is in trouble. Yes.
But the path that the MAGA Republicans, that path is a path of destruction from my point of view. Do you agree or not?
Well, the thing is that basically that's where we are headed right now.
Yeah.
And you see, the thing is, you cannot say that the other people will be marginalized so much. People are running scared. I'll be very candid with you. People are running scared. It's just that some people, you cannot intimidate them easily. But this thing has been going on before. Remember, Martin Luther King stood up before, and because of similar situation. And I can tell you there will be people to stand up. And not only that, you talk about this guy in Burkina Faso, to worry. This guy, because of the environment we find, the global environment we find ourselves in, this guy had put together something that even people even saying that he's greater than Martin Luther King. He's greater than from South Africa. Mm-hmm. Nelson Mandela. Mm-hmm. Yes, because this guy is putting together now a military buttress by China, Russia. And guess what happened?
We're out of time. Wilford, thank you. Crystal, sorry, couldn't hear you, but thank you for being here.
All right. I don't know if you can hear me now.
Now I hear you. Crystal, oh now gosh. I hear you. Here we go, the last minute. So you did something.
That's but listen, all right.
We'll come do this again. Thank you so much. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland, and we'll see you next time.